Hi, welcome to my Critical Family History Podcast. My name is Catherine Lyon, and I am a female cisgendered white American who grew up in Michigan. My ancestors are from Europe, mostly from Sweden, Wales, Ireland, and Germany. Those are the countries that we know about. I want to start my podcast with a brief discussion of my last name, which is Lyon, because it's important to me. So in 1881, my grandpa's great-grandpa, Alfred Carl Nilsson, moved to the United States from Sweden. He arrived to Boston and ultimately moved to northern Michigan, where there was a relatively large population of Swedes. When he got there, when he arrived with his family, they met many other Swedish immigrants with the last name Nilsson, who were not related to our family. So in order to differentiate his family from the other Nilssons and to seem less foreign, my great-great-grandpa Alfred changed his last name to Lyon. I think this story says a lot about the United States' fraught history with immigration that has continued to this day. Alfred didn't want to be grouped together with other newly arrived Swedes, so he arbitrarily changed his last name for generations to come. I feel like this connects with the Agarwal-Ragnath reading about connecting past to present and how we as educators need to construct parallels and connections between the past and the present to show that racism and discrimination still exist today and are very systemically present in our society. Also, what's interesting to me about this story is that until recently, this year actually, with another project that we did for the LTEP program, my entire family thought that when Alfred moved here, his last name was Nelson. And so Nelson instead of Nilsson, so it was N-E-L-S-O-N. But it's actually N-I-L-S-S-O-N, and the only reason that we know about that change was because I was able to find a document that shows the boat record that he was on, where like when he bought his ticket, and it showed that his name was Alfred Carl Nilsson. So I shared that with the rest of my family, and they all thought that it had been Nelson. So we are still learning about our past from the future. Now I'd like to switch gears and spend the rest of the podcast talking about my mom's family. My maternal grandparents made their home in Grosse Pointe, a city bordering Detroit on Lake St. Clair. Grosse Pointe started as a community of second homes for wealthy Detroiters. In the 1930s, Grosse Pointe boomed alongside the automobile industry in Detroit as a preferred suburb of industry executives. Grosse Pointe is known for its wealth and preppier old money style. Grosse Pointe is also over 90% white. It is definitely an ideal place to raise a family. Here's my Aunt Mary Kay talking about what it was like to grow up in Grosse Pointe in the 60s.
Oh, that it was just a wonderful life. That as children, we were carefree. We got to ride our bikes everywhere, to the library, the park, the lake, to the little village to go shopping. And that it was a really nice lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it quite a bit, and like we had a lot of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we had some structure at home, but the lifestyle, we weren't dependent on parents taking us places. We would go outside in the evening and play with all the kids on the block, and when the streetlights came on, then we would go back inside.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a ton of kids in our neighborhood, and everyone kind of lived the same way, and it was a really nice, special place, and we knew it at the time. Like, we had a lot of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we had some structure at home, but the lifestyle, we weren't dependent on parents taking us places. We would go outside in the evening and play with all the kids on the block, and when the streetlights came on, then we would go back inside.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a ton of kids in our neighborhood, and everyone kind of lived the same way, and it was a really nice, special place, and we knew it at the time.
In a word, Grosse Pointe was safe, sheltered even. According to 1960 census data, Grosse Pointe's population was 55,000, so it wasn't necessarily a small town, even though oftentimes it felt like one. Additionally, Detroit was right down the road, and before 1967, my mom and her family visited the city often to go shopping, visit people and relatives, and for special events such as parades. The differences between Grosse Pointe and Detroit were fairly obvious. My aunt explains what she noticed about Detroit when she was 10. And just for context, Ruthie, who she references, is an African-American woman who helped out in my family's home when they were children. Detroit, or were you not really clinging to that?
We were aware of it. Ruthie, who worked for us, once in a while we would drive her home.
Mm-hmm.
And we would see her little children who were about our age. And the home and the neighborhood, and it was quite different. It was sad.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew about Alter Road, because if you went down Jefferson, heading towards downtown Detroit, it changed. You know, we had grass and beautiful houses and big trees with, you know, making canopies in the street. And the minute you got to Alter Road, houses were crammed together.
Mm-hmm.
It was not pretty. It was just nasty. So there, we knew about it.
So despite it not being very nice relative to their house in, or their neighborhood in Grosse Pointe. Like I said, their family, my mom's family, visited Detroit fairly regularly, but that kind of changed in the summer of 1967. So, in 1967, in the summer, Detroit experienced one of the most destructive and deadliest race riots in United States history. For 5 days, from July 23rd to July 27, police violently clashed with mostly black Detroiters, leaving 43 dead, 1,189 injured, 7,231 people arrested, including a four-year-old, and $40 to $45 million in damages. Before the riots, many black residents of Detroit felt that the police department was biased, and social conditions were bad, and progress in Detroit was too slow. I was curious about what my family's perception of what was happening in Detroit in terms of race relations and the race riots, especially given that they had African-American help at the time, was, given their positionality as being wealthy and white and living in Grosse Pointe. Here's my mom talking about her understanding of the riots and the role that the media played and how she understood race relations.
Well, actually, I remember some important things. We had just moved to the house on Lakeland, which was off of Jefferson, much closer and more accessible to downtown than where we were before. And you could literally hear the, you could hear, I don't know if it was gunfire or what, but you could definitely hear things happening. It was very scary. They also had a curfew for everybody. You had to be in at dark. Even the park closed. Usually it was up until 10, but it closed earlier because of the curfew. And I think I told you that my best friend Julie's house was right across from the Dodge Estate, mm-hmm. and they had armed guards mm-hmm. on their entryway to their home. They had kind of a structure leading into their home. So Julie could look out her bedroom window and see armed guards lying, mm-hmm. waiting to mm-hmm. protect the estate. Very frightening.
Did you ever feel like the riots would move into Grosse Pointe, or people from Detroit who were upset would come to Grosse Pointe and do anything?
I think that some people may have felt that. I think I was too young to really have that fear.
Okay. Did you, I know it was summer when the riots happened, but did you talk about, or do you remember people talking about the riots, either like at home or like in public or anything?
I don't remember talking about it too much. I know my mom had some real concerns because my dad was working at the University of Detroit in their office, which was very, very close to where the riots were. So he went, during that period of time, he would go downtown and he was right in the middle of things. And then
he did go to work during the riots?
I believe he did. I don't think he missed any days. I really don't recall, though. But I know he went at some point, because I know my mom was apprehensive about him going. Mm-hmm. But I also remember there was a neighbor on the original street I lived on, and his family owned, like, a meat market, and I think he lost his business during the riots.
Mm-hmm.
So, I remember that.
Do you remember hearing about it on the news at all, or in the papers? I know you were young, so you maybe probably didn't read the paper, but...
Well, actually, we always got the free press on the news, so, and it was always accessible to us. So I probably did pick it up a little bit, but we really, as a family, you just didn't key into TV back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had one television for seven of us, and I don't really remember watching any of it on TV. I do remember, though, this is not related to Detroit, but this is kind of when I was younger, when they had the uprising in the South where they had put dogs, they had German shepherds that were trying to keep people off of the streets. And I was too young to understand that that wasn't Ruthie's neighborhood. And I was so sad because the dogs were really quite vicious and attacking black people who were protesting. And they showed that on television. I clearly remember it just being so sad thinking that that was Ruthie or her family that was in danger. But it wasn't. It was the South. I didn't know how it started. I do know that we knew that the people who were rioting, we felt, lived in very poor neighborhoods that and didn't have a lot of opportunity. And that was kind of why we thought that they were rioting, is that they were just fed up with it.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really know the story. I mean, I didn't know the story of how it started.
Do you feel like growing up in Grosse Pointe, so close to Detroit, yet so, like, obviously divided from Detroit, which, like, do you feel like you could tell around that time that it was, like, a racial divide in addition to, like, a geographic divide?
I feel it was truly an economic divide.
Okay.
In a way, Grosse Pointe is set up is so weird because it's got the water and such a big percentage of it. So all that it has, it's not like a neighborhood surrounded by different types of neighborhoods. So it was Grosse Pointe, which was really nice, and then some low-income areas of Detroit, and then kind of rural to the other side. So it was really different than, say, living in a suburb surrounded by all different cities.
Mm-hmm. I was kind of surprised by my mom's responses. Even though Grosse Pointe was in a bubble and the economy of Grosse Pointe and Detroit were very different, I was surprised that my mom didn't recognize the racial aspect of the riots. I understand her to mean that they were upset because they were economically disadvantaged, they being the rioters. Also, they were black. My mom was very young at this time, so I feel like it's somewhat reasonable that she didn't pick up on the idea that their economic disadvantage was connected to their blackness. Here's my aunt, who's a little bit older, talking about her understanding of the riots.
I do. There's a couple things that really I remember clearly. It was the sounds and the sights. I remember hearing the tanks rolling down the street from our house.
Mm-hmm.
We hear that in the distance. I remember looking up in the night sky and seeing smoke
mm-hmm.
from the burning. I remember my parents were out for a walk and the policeman told them, go home, don't leave your house. I remember we were supposed to move during that time period.
You're supposed to move, like, away from Grosse Pointe?
Yeah, we're going to move from one house in Grosse Pointe to
another. Oh, okay.
And we weren't sure whether the moving van would ever arrive because they were located on the east side of Detroit.
Okay.
Amazingly, they did. Mm-hmm. But we, you know, people weren't going anywhere. The city was basically shut down.
Mm-hmm.
But they did. We ended up moving during the riots, which was kind of scary, but we did. I think things were kind of winding down a little bit by the time that happened.
Yeah.
And I remember my mom being worried for my dad's safety. I don't think anyone went to work for several days.
Mm-hmm.
The city was just, you know, burning and an uproar. But my dad worked on the west side, so he had to go through Detroit
mm-hmm.
to get to work because we lived on the east side. And I remember my mom being worried about him with his commute.
Mm-hmm.
So I do remember fear.
Yeah.
But I also remember we were scared, but I also remember people said, well, there's a lot of mafia in Grosse Pointe, and they're not going to let anybody yet. So, I mean, that was something we laughed about, but we kind of felt it was true because there was a lot that lived closer to Alton Road over that way.
Yeah.
And so we felt that we had some protection other than the police.
Yeah. So do you think there was ever, like, a legitimate threat of, like, the riots moving into Grosse Pointe, or do you think that because of the reasons you just said that they were not going to...
Yeah. I think it's possible, but we were a ways away from 12th Street where it started, logistically. But I think with the resources we had, like I said, the police and everything, that they tried to contain it, but it could have happened, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But, like, logistically, we were several miles away.
Right, yeah. And so do you remember, you mentioned a little bit of, like, people being afraid and, like, not wanting to, like, go out as much. But do you remember people talking about the riots? Either? I know it was in the summertime, so probably not at school. But, like, did you hear, like, people in, like, at home or, like, in your community, did people talk about what was going on?
Yeah, you know, I would say for us it was kind of like, you know, 9/11 in mm-hmm. terms of you talked about it for a long, long time.
Okay.
I mean, it filled the newspapers, it filled the TV, it filled your life. Mm-hmm. I remember my dad taking us down to where the riot started, probably about a month later.
Mm-hmm.
But just, he wanted us to see it, where it started down at 12th Street. And everyone was still talking about it. It was just everywhere for a long time, because it changed everything. It really did. It just changed. It changed life in the city. It changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a fear afterwards.
A fear of it happening again, or...
What's that?
A fear of something like that happening again, or something else?
Yeah, and just that so much of the city was destroyed, so much was burned down and wrecked, and, you know, there was so much damage and destruction, and you never felt, you know, there was this big lack of trust at that point, it seemed like, and that really didn't get over when the riots went over, so... That was still there.
Yeah. Who do you think, like, a lack of trust in, like, the police or the government, or?
Well, I think a lot of it was race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't trust us. We were then afraid to go into Detroit because of the harm that had been done to the city and the harm they did to themselves. I mean, so I think it was really more racially motivated. That was the trust.
So do you feel like after the riots happened, did your relationship with, like, Detroit and going to Detroit, did it change or shift at all?
Yes, it did, because I never felt that safe going downtown. I used to go take the bus down. I think I did, you know, maybe once or twice afterwards, but it was just, you were more scared. Where before it was like, well, everybody went downtown Detroit to shop. It was no big deal, but... Then after the riots, people were afraid to go.
Yeah.
So it just changed so much.
Mm-hmm.
So we stayed in our own community more. I mean, we did, but just going down Jefferson Avenue was always scary.
Yeah.
After that.
So growing up, or, like, at the time of the riots, did you have a conception or an idea about why the riots happened?
Yeah, we did. Because it was, you know, on the TV and the paper, and, you know, I think there was a feeling that it wasn't an equal life for us and for Black people at the time.
Yeah. Given that they were both so young at the time, I feel like it's important to think about my mom and my aunt's experiences later in life that could have retroactively shaped their perspectives of the riots. My mom moved around quite a bit after she graduated college before settling in Traverse City, which is a town that's more white than Grosse Pointe. She married my dad, a cherry farmer. My aunt worked for the Michigan State Police in the Homeland Security Department in Lansing, the capital of Michigan. She worked in an office role there. And I think that these vastly different experiences later in life had a huge impact on their perspectives of the race riots that happened in their childhood. I feel like, to me, what really stands out about both my aunt and my mom's perception and experiences with the race riots in Detroit in 1967 were their relative lack of like understanding or compassion for the people who are the most affected by it. I think that they feel quite far removed from the race riots, and that obviously, like, there's nothing that they could have done to prevent them or, like, to help the race riots end. But I think that, like, the way that they are thinking about it really says a lot about that time period and the perception of racial differences from that time period. Like, it's not something that really they didn't feel connected to, or they didn't feel like they were part of the society that allowed that to happen, especially being wealthy from Detroit. They didn't, or from Grosse Pointe, they didn't see the connection between their wealth relative to the lack of wealth of their black neighbors, essentially, and the African-American people who were helping in their home, too. I feel like this attitude can be connected to Chapter 2 of Black Ants and Buddhists, when Mary Cowie wrote about misperceptions of poor people, or people who are less fortunate than us at this time. Although there were a lot of poor white people who were involved in the riots, I think due to my family's comfortable financial position, they were able to divorce the riots from something that could be connected through them through race. Also in Chapter 9, Mary Cowie addresses the importance of knowing and understanding your family history and positionality. I think for me, it's good to understand how my mom and aunt perceived race, and that they, especially my mom, didn't recognize systems of oppression they grew up in and contributed to, especially with having African American help at their home, keeping Ruthie away from her own home and children. It's important to hold loving space for my mom and my aunt because they grew up in a time and place where people didn't talk about race and racism and the role that white people played in the oppression of people of color. Moving forward, I think this means that as my mother's daughter, I need to have those conversations in my life about things that occur around me, even if I can write those things off as not involving me directly. It is vital for me, especially as an educator, to recognize the role that I play in the structural oppression of people of color. Thanks for listening.